honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a fascinating conversation today with 97-year-old Robbie Robinson of Henderson, Nevada. He served with the 11th Armored Division during World War II, went on to a long career as an electrician in Southern California while moonlighting with a little radio theater and other performance arts. He even served on a mounted unit for his county. His life has been quite full, but in order to enjoy all of that, he first had to make it home from World War II. I don't want to gloss over anything that's important. Were there other situations that you look back on now and you say that was a really close call where that could have been my time?
Yeah, one time I was underneath the truck and they were strafing from a hill up above us and you could see the bullets hitting the ground and it was like maybe 4 or 5 feet ahead of you. But you could see them hitting in the ground and we were hiding underneath the truck. We got shot at quite a number of times at various incidents. I know when Harold Maddox got shot out of my Jeep, well, I actually didn't get shot. He got shot in the Jeep, and he slumped over and reached up and pulled him down into the ditch, and the ditch was half full of water. So I had to lay there in that ice water until we finally got control of the battle. But we were taking fire from behind us, because that's where we were in advance. We weren't sure if they were shooting at us or shooting at them, but nevertheless, why you were under fire in that whole situation. But yeah, there's a lot of times you have some pretty close calls.
Is there something when you think back on it, it's been a long time, but I know you went on the honor flight recently with Honor Flight Southern Nevada, and that probably stirred a lot of these memories for you. Is there something that you look back on and you say, you know, that was the hardest part, or the most difficult or challenging element of what you did in the war?
One of the things that affected us, and still does today, was when we took Dachau and Breslau concentration camps. And the people were starving, they were emaciated, and we saw that, and the first thing they said is, you cannot feed these people. If you give them food, it'll kill them. So we will take care of them. These were German or French or Italian or whatever, people from other countries that were, for whatever reason, put into there to, it was a work camp, and they had striped uniforms on, or clothes. They were emaciated, terrible. We could give them cigarettes, but we couldn't give them any kind of food at all. That stays with you. You see that. The smell was horrendous. It stays with you, unfortunately.
And I mean, I wasn't there. My grandfather was. He liberated Buchenwald, and he had some memories that certainly followed him the rest of his life. Could you ever have imagined that you would see something like that, that human beings had been treated in that kind of fashion?
We had no idea that the Germans were conscripting and putting people into work camps like that. Thank God I didn't see Auschwitz, but Dachau and Breslau was bad enough. That was terrible. But there were some good times, too. There were some good memories. One of them was one time we were on a reconnaissance mission. We came over a hill and looked down, and there was 10,000 Hungarian troops with horse-drawn cannons. The guy that was in charge of the troops said, you know, surrender. They were supposed to be fighting with the Germans, and the Hungarians didn't want any part of that. And this was a whole damn division. So I called back and said, we captured some people, and I said, okay, we'll send them on back. This commander, whatever his name is, reached in his side thing there and pulled out a Hungarian police special 38 pistol and handed it to me. I still have it today. So we got back to the camp to report in, and they were still coming in. They were still coming in, you know, and they didn't know what to do with them. They had, I mean, a whole division, that's 10,000 people. And so they finally figured out, you know. But the wonderful part about that is that some of those Hungarians can really cook. And so we had later on, when the battalions got pretty well established and into peacetime, we had some delicious meals.
There was a pretty good find that you came across at one point, because you've got a photo in here of you with a 35 Ford that you became the owner of for a while.
Well, I bought that from the Burgermeister. The guy that owned that was a USC student, German, going to USC, and then when the war broke out, he shipped the car home and became a Luftwaffe pilot. Unfortunately, he lost his life. And I say that because, I mean, he could have been an American, but he brought that Ford home. The Burgermeister did not even know how to drive. So I went and talked to him about, can we buy that car? I talked to him in German about buying that. And he wanted two cartons of cigarettes. To him, that was like $1,200. To me, it was a dollar. And so I gave him two cartons of cigarettes. I ended up driving that Ford back to the camp and became very popular.
I bet. And you were so popular, you ended up staying over there for a long time after VE Day. But let me ask you about VE Day. Was that a significant day for you when you heard the news that, hey, Germany, after all of this, has surrendered to the Allies?
Well, yeah, I was in Linz, Austria, on the Danube River. And by the way, it's not blue, it's brown. And the upshot I had is they said, well, the war's over, don't shoot anymore. Don't fire anything. Unfortunately, we ran into a couple of Hitlerjugend that didn't want to give up. And so they had to be captured or killed. Other than that, why, we were on the border, we met with the Russians. So the Russians could speak a little German and we could speak a little German. So we communicated back and forth with them. But that was the end of the war, May the 6th for us on the Danube River in Austria.
And I mentioned you stayed over there a long time. You didn't know when you turned down that Purple Heart that that might have gotten you home sooner. But as it turned out, you got to stand guard during the Nuremberg trials? What did you see there?
See, what they did is they broke up the 11th Armored, and then they put us in the 4th Armored for a while, and I was with the 8th Armored for a short time. I was even with the 16th Armored for a little while. Well, they were shuffling guys around, and during one of those periods, I don't remember which one, they assigned us to walk the perimeter near the Nuremberg trials. And so you're on guard duty, and you just had your rifle and you covered a particular area. It was guard duty, just like anything else. But everybody did it. I mean, it didn't make any difference if you were a cook or what. I mean, everybody had a chance to walk the guard duty. We didn't know it was a big deal then. Nuremberg trials, which later became a big deal.
Well, and you've shared all these stories, and again, I don't want to leave anything out, so if there's something else that you think is relevant or important, please share. But all this has happened, and we didn't tell everybody that you never finished high school before you went into the Army, and you decided to do that when you came home?
Well, the thing is that, yeah, as soon as my folks moved to the place where they were building a house in Monrovia, I realized it was a good idea. I had gone back to church, and so I established a group of people that were youngsters about the same age I am. I realized it'd probably be a good idea to go back to Monrovia High School, and so I went back and registered to finish the 11th grade. So I finished part of the 11th grade and the 12th grade and graduated from Monrovia in 1947.
Have you ever been back to some of those areas where you were sleeping in foxholes or getting shot at?
One thing I did get to do, because I had quite a bit of cash, I got to go on a 30-day liberty or pass or whatever you want to call it to England, and I visited my Aunt Ida, my grandfather's sister, in Kingsland, England. I shipped them a bunch of food from the commissary of the PX. They hadn't had butter and sugar and a lot of things like this, and we could go in and buy what we don't. So I went in and spent a few bucks on a lot of food and had it shipped to them. So they were very grateful about that. And then I visited them for maybe 2 or 3 days, I don't know. Saw the homestead where my grandfather and the family came from, King's Lynn.
And I know the people of Great Britain certainly appreciated the American contributions to World War II, because they likely would have lost their freedom otherwise. And I'm thinking you probably have some perspective on that from all the places you were, all the displaced people you helped return to their homeland. What is your perspective on what all of you guys did over there and why it still matters today?
Those people were captured or dominated by the Germans, and we went in and freed them. So it was about freedom, very much like when we broke away from England. You know, it was about freedom. It was about being your own boss. And they realized that. It takes a while to realize that you can go from town to town. You don't have to tell anybody. You can just say, hey, I think we'll run over to so-and-so. And that's freedom. Or you can go to the store. You can go to the park. You do whatever you want. You don't have to report. You don't have to see anybody. There's no armed guard or anything like that. That's what they had when it was over. They really appreciated it, really. The Europeans, whatever it was, even the German people realized when the war was over and there were Americans all around, they wanted to know all about America. This country, you don't realize it because you live here and you're spoiled rotten, but this is the promised land.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but the sense I got was that even though you did all these things, even though you've held on to quite a few items and a lot of memorabilia from that time, you came home and you got on with your life. You did some performing. You were an electrician for Pasadena School District. Got a picture of you there up on a horse leading the mounted unit for Los Angeles County, so you're busy and busy. It sounds like your family hadn't heard all that much about what you did in the war.
No, one of the things is I didn't need to talk about it. They knew, okay, Dad was a World War II veteran, and that was it. I had the GI Bill so he could go to school, and had a VA so you could get a VA loan, buy a house. Those were advantages, and that was about it. I didn't talk about all that. It wasn't something that we, you know, I did save everything so that they could look it up later, but it wasn't essential. I didn't get any medals. Well, I got a good conduct medal, and I didn't probably deserve that either. But anyway, why? It's just like anything else. You go vote because that's the thing to do. You went into service and served because that was the thing to do. I don't care if you're from Korea or in the Vietnam, but you went because that was the thing to do. And God bless those people.
Amen. And on that note, I don't want to forget to say thank you. Thank you for serving. Thank you for answering that call. Thank you so much for sharing this story. And I asked you what your family knew because it sounds like your experience with Honor Flight Southern Nevada has opened a lot of doorways to conversations. They told me you rarely wear a hat that says World War II veteran, but you wore it one day. They spotted you. They said, you need to go on the honor flight. And then you did that. What was that experience like for you with Honor Flight Southern Nevada?
It was a wonderful experience, very emotional. And I would recommend it to any veteran, if he gets a chance to do that, to do it.
You said very emotional. Was there a particular element of it that stirred the most emotion for you?
Sure. I mean, you know, you see the unknown soldier, and you see the thousands of graves of the soldiers there, and the monuments, all the various things that, you know, you realize that it's hard to even express the thing. When you see all that and realize what it's for and why, it makes you want to cry.
Am I inferring in your comments, too, that there's an element, whether it's there at Arlington or at the World War II Memorial, where they've got those 4,000 gold stars representing 400,000 who died? Is there an element of, hey, that could have been me?
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, the thing is, it's just like any time something happens and you survive it, you question yourself, well, okay, I made it. How come? You're lucky you got to this point. So, yeah, it's constantly questioned. Well, I guess whatever omnipotent power you want to give allegiance to is watching over you. I've never been one to preach religion, but that's the way it goes, you know.
You feel like there was some protection or divine intervention on your behalf?
Well, there's no question. I mean, you this isn't an accident. I mean, you got to look at the whole thing.
I just mentioned that wall of gold stars at the World War II Memorial. When you were there looking at that, were there specific individuals that you had known that came to mind for you?
Yeah, always. You know, you think of some of the guys and some of the things that you've seen, and yeah, and you don't want to remember that, but they come back to you. That will cause you to really break up. I remember one, I was sitting there someplace looking at that wall, and I remember the guy by the name of Yapjack, that's a Polish name. He lost it. He just was under fire, and he charged a machine gun nest, took the machine gun nest out, killed him. So you remember that? Yeah.
And I recognize that's not easy to talk about, and I don't take it lightly that you're willing to help us understand a little bit of what you've been through and what you've carried with you for all these years.
Never, ever forget, even if you want to. Kind of like an open wound in a way. You know, it's there. If you pick at it, you're going to bleed again.
Well, again, thank you for taking so much time to help us understand what it was like. This may not be an easy question, but when you think back over those years and all the years, 97 years on this planet, it's clear you're not done. People can hear how with it you are, and when they see you, they'll see how young you look, full head of hair and plenty of energy and all that. When you look back on 97 years, is there something that, in your mind, you're most proud of or satisfied with or thankful for?
Well, sure, you're an American. That's it.
And that is plenty, isn't it? Robbie Robinson, 97 years old, of Henderson, Nevada. Quite a tapestry he has woven for us over the last hour. Don't forget to check out those photos and the short video at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. Thanks to Belinda Morse of Honor Flight Southern Nevada for the connection to Robbie. We are out of time today, but I hope you'll join us again next time on Hometown Heroes. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.